This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Gauteng and FMR in Cape Town.
Well, I'll say it again. I said it yesterday. The fact that the National Planning Commission has slashed its jobs targets and also warned that our current path ends up at the door of the IMF ahead of the summit should be a clarion call to action. But it also shows the disconnect between Gwen Lane and Main Street. Now, to talk about what's going on Gwen Lane, I've got Liston Mankies, Portfolio Manager at Invest Securities. Liston, great to see you again.
Well, thank you. Just on the markets today, I think a very interesting day because we started with a big down. Around about 1,000 points we were off on the All Share Index at one point, and we recovered enormously to be only 300 down. Now, again, if you had just heard the 300 down, you would be quite disappointed.
It's all relative. I see that that big dip just after 10 o'clock and then a steady ascent throughout the day. What was the negative sentiment at the open all about?
You know, we can't find anything. We kept asking each other and saying, well, what is it? Where is it? Yes, you know, the rand had gone back to 14.31 to the dollar, and that may have just been a bit of negative sentiment. But again, if you look at the shares that were trading down, you know, they're all well-known names. And when you look at the upside, nearly every one of them is in what you would call the resources sector.
Yeah.
So definitely a market of two different types today.
A market of two sectors. Just to go through some of those top five moves, Sibanye up almost 10.5%. Anglo Gold's up over 4%, Anglo Platt's up 3.7%, and Goldfield's up 3.5%. Who says gold mining is a sunset industry? But those are daily moves, Liston.
Well, yeah, that's right. And again, it wouldn't surprise us to see that ahead of a mining Indaba, but it is actually balanced by the fact that the underlying gold and platinum prices have put on roughly $20 in the last couple of days.
Yeah, about time certainly for the platinum producers as well. We've seen really good runs in rhodium and palladium. Platinum has been the real laggard there. And on the downside, Clicks down 4.4%. Foreigners love Clicks, so I wonder if it's the foreigners falling out of love.
Again, they're not that impressed by our petrol price increase. I think that is certainly played on their minds. Our petrol price is still amongst the cheapest in the world, I must add. And, if I terrify people and suggest 20 rand a litre would solve a lot of problems, including SANRAL and e-tolls not being paid. So, unfortunately, you have to pay for what you get.
Yeah, I think a lot of people looking for creative solutions, lift clubs. I wonder if that app Blah Blah Car is now going to find great traction, where you could put your car onto the app as a lift club, almost like an Uber, and catch a ride with someone from your area. It was quite novel. But we love our cars in South Africa, so it didn't quite take off a couple of years ago. I wonder if now, with the fuel price heading to 20, whether or not we might see that. But it's a good time now, Liston, on the 2nd of October, to look forward, obviously, at the fourth quarter, but also to reflect on the third quarter. And you sent me a very frightening, a very depressing chart on how we fared across the various indices, and it doesn't make for pretty reading. Just take me through the carnage.
No, that's right. Particularly September, if you look, the month was down, and I'm talking the all share here, 5%. Now, that's a significant amount to lose in 1 month. But unfortunately, it was added on to other months. So we certainly did not have a good third quarter if you were invested locally. And certainly, if you look across the water, and particularly if you look over 3 years, there's a huge gap between what they've been able to achieve in 3 years and what we've been able to achieve in 3 years. And I guess we all know what it is, where it is, and how it is. But the real question is, who's going to do something about it? Now, you do tell me, and I have to believe you, that the mining charter is at last going to do something for the mines here, because they were previously major employers of labour. The end result of that, obviously, is that the miners then have more money to spend, their families have more money to spend. So we desperately need something in that area.
Yeah, it is still a major flywheel of the South African economy. Its contribution to GDP has been dwindling, but upstream and downstream, as the employer, we know the banks, Capitec is one of the biggest providers around the mining communities, and we see retailers around there as well. So it is still very much a flywheel and a big export earner for South Africa as well. I think cold comfort, though, to point out that this may be a short-term phenomenon that we're seeing, even though it's been for the last 5 years, it feels like we've been going sideways. If you are drawing a monthly retirement income in this market, very difficult. And in fact, I think a lot of people might be now eating into their capital, which is a very dangerous thing.
Well, I think we've had that story very much the case, you know, where people felt that they could get numbers out of a pension fund or out of a retirement annuity bigger than the earnings of that fund. And yes, we are getting older, and yes, you know, but unfortunately you don't want it to run out. And I think the evidence nowadays is that it is actually doing that to a large number of people. You can only draw so much, and you're on your own. I've actually had people in my office saying, you know, I think we should go back to the old days when the company or the pension fund paid you and you could never run out.
Yeah, the defined benefit days, the defined contribution days is all about you're on your own, boy. Maybe we even need to take it one step further and go to defined outcomes, which I've heard from Alex Forbes. Speaking of which, I see that Andrew Dafoe is fighting his sacking, taking Alex Forbes to the CCMA. You drew my attention to AXA's financial report, which only came out yesterday, and I got to speak to the FD based on a limited set of financials that they had released to the media a couple of days ago. The attachment you sent me has left me absolutely aghast. I can't see a listed firm surviving this kind of attack, a savage attack from its auditor. Just run through what the Auditor General has found here.
Well again, there are a number of things that you look at, whether it's a company, and by the way, this is SOC, standing for state-owned corporation, and it does pay tax, so it's, you know, in with the mix of all of us. First part is the revenue of the group was 6.9 billion, down from 8.6 billion. The profit before tax amounted to 1.3 billion, down from 2.6 billion. You know, this is a company that's not having a good time at all. Now, obviously, we want our tourists and we want everything, and you need explanations for this. And so, again, the profit for the group was 843 having been 2 billion the year before. So, you know, 60% off profits. Now, you know, if shareholders were concerned about some of our other listed companies, maybe we are all shareholders in this and we should be concerned. But it goes further on, and you know, they do say that it has something to do with the change in the form of accounting from the old IAS 39 to the IFRS 9. Now, I'm not clued up enough to know exactly how much that would have cost, so I'll have to trust them on those numbers. But it was the notes to the accounts that were concerning, because note 8 says, as disclosed in the financial statements, the corresponding figures for the years 2016 and 27 have been restated as a result of errors discovered during the 2017-18 year. So you really want to know how big those were and why. And then, as they say, as disclosed in the report, AXA has a pending litigation case, which they say, you know, there is no ability to work out exactly what that's going to do. But more importantly, lower down, 27. Now, of course, this is all part of a thing called the Public Funds Management Act. But they say, goods, works or services were not procured through a procurement process which is fair, equitable, transparent and competitive. Gee, I wouldn't like that to be said of any company that I was associated with.
But wait, there's a whole lot more.
It does go on. And it says, you know, sufficient audit evidence could not be obtained because information relating to three contracts awarded could not be provided. Now, golly, I don't know about you, but that frightens me enormously. And, you know, we have the King Commission, and governance is the big word. And we have these wonderful audit and risk committees in every requirement. Further goes on, it says bid documentation for procurement did not meet the stipulated minimum threshold. It says I was unable to obtain sufficient appropriate audit evidence that disciplinary steps were taken
no
against officials.
No accountability, once again.
Again, it is just some frightening items. Then they even attack leadership. There has been slow response in implementing the commitments made in the prior year to address the internal control deficiencies. My golly, as I said, anybody who wants to can can read it, they can find it. Well, they can find it on the AXA website.
I think the long and the short of it, the big question is, based on the evidence of the last 20 years, should the South African state be in the business of owning companies?
Well, again, I was there at the time of a lot of them being put together, and it was called in the national interest. Now, we were a siege economy, let's put it as simple as that. You know, our ability to deal and interact with the outside world was quite complicated, and we had all sorts of control boards. I mean, it was unbelievable, and I used to joke with people and say, I think we should call ourselves the Soviet Republic of South Africa and join forces with the Russians and nationalize the railroads, nationalize the ports, nationalize the airlines. I mean, why not? And then I said, golly, they are already all nationalized. So and again, I just picked up this afternoon. Now, the reason I'm covering this under market commentary is these things come out on the Stock Exchange news surface known as SENS, and the one that came out this afternoon was the Trans-Caledon
Tunnel Authority.
Tunnel Authority. And I had thought, you know, well, here's something that is working. You know, we are getting water in Gauteng. Yes, they had a drought in the Western Cape, but, you know, you can't blame anybody for the drought. You can blame them for some of the responses. But actually, this does not make good reading either. The opening line from the minister himself says, the water sector is in urgent need of a strategic turnaround. And they then go into how they're going to do that with a five-pillar turnaround strategy, and we're going to establish. Now, you see, it's not that it's there. They still have to go through the process of establishing both an authority and a regulator. I just don't want to count how many days that might take. And then they do carry on and say, you know, that there's a change in the landscape, you know, both from a human pressure and climate change. So we now have a population of 56 million. That is a demanding amount. Cape Town's water and dams were planned for a city of 2 million. It's now 4 million. And you cannot get twice the amount of water. There just isn't the storage for that. So the only point I make about all of these things is they're out in the open, available for discussion, and I now truly believe that we are more likely to get a proper response from the authorities or the ruling party or the government, whatever you want to call them, to say this cannot continue. Just in terms of the story from the chief executive of the Caledon Tunnel story, he says, the reporting year brought severe revenue disruptions, largely emanating from the weakened financial state of the Department of Water and Sanitation, which translated into project implementation challenges. Now, I think that last bit is code, meaning saying we couldn't do what we wanted.
Well, quite clearly, because the department was almost bankrupted by Nomvula Mokonyane, the former minister. There are all kinds of issues around phase two of the Lesotho Highlands water scheme, the extension of the Katse Dam, and because of the fig leaf of transformation, I'm afraid to say, it's that kind of state capture that has led to the position we find ourselves in. The P word, privatization, is back in play, and quite clearly based on this evidence, not before we can hopefully try and salvage what looks like a pretty dire situation. A lot of people have said to me, maybe that's what Goldman Sachs is privy to when it says the rand should be at 11, that we have some key state-owned enterprises that should be on the chopping block. There was some interesting buying in directors' dealings as well today, and I know you love looking at that list and to see where the smart money is going in these markets. Well, Quilter, the CEO, is stocking up.
Yeah, and he's doing it with £1.3 million. So he is definitely putting his money where his mouth is, or where his employer is. And I just think that is important. Just quickly on Old Mutual and Quilter, because not everybody knows exactly where Quilter fits in. But if you remember, Old Mutual traded at about 39 Rand a few months back. And then suddenly, if you looked at it, it was trading at about 30 Rand. And you said, where's my money gone? Well, actually, you've got about 9 Rand's worth of Quilter. Yeah. And if you didn't know you had it, I'm telling you now. But it worse is to come, because they're giving you some Nedbank later this month. And it's going to be about 8 Rand 50 worth of that. So one morning you will wake up and find that your Old Mutual are trading at 21.50. So please, I'm saying to the listeners, don't panic. It's going to be given back to you in the form of other shares.
and some fractions, which will be in the form of cash, because some of the sums mean that it doesn't all just divvy up neatly.
Correct.
There was another interesting bit of director's dealing that you pointed out to me. Christopher Seabrook, who's now the CEO of SabVest, very well known in corporate South Africa, sits on numerous boards, nibbling away at Rolfs, which is a small cap that I know a few of my regular small cap analysts love, Keith McLachlan and Anthony Clark in particular. What do you make of that bit of dealing?
Well, again, remember they had a very bad patch where some money went missing, and they've had to recover from that. So I think a bit of it is saying, well, you know, this is now cheap. That is a non-recurring item, and the business is sound. It would have reasonable opportunities. And I think he's a fairly astute fella, but again, you can't go and buy as many of those as you want to either. He's been buying over a series of days in numbers of 400,000, 800,000, a million.
Yeah. And SabVest itself has been put to me as a fantastic opportunity if you can get through the liquidity issues. I haven't quite got through the liquidity issues myself. So what is your take on SabVest?
Well, now the problem they have there is they have two types of shares, the SabVest and the SabVest N, in the same story as you have in Naspers and Naspers N.
Yeah.
And the point being that the vast majority of shares are of the N type. Now, just a huge number of people just say, if I haven't got the same kind of vote as the other guys, I don't want to be part of this company. There's definitely a move like that. So, you know, one of the things I would recommend is that they do away with the N's unless there's a very good reason for having them. But the negative is that the N's particularly trade at a discount. By the way, SabVest is a pure investment holding company. Some unlisted, some listed, and some of the unlisted is quite interesting and exciting. But the point is you're buying the SabVest ends at 30% discount to the NAV, to the net asset value.
And often those investment holding companies do trade at a slight discount to the NAV.
You'll see it in Remgro.
Yeah, to pay for the management and all the rest of it. It's whether or not you really like some of those unlisteds that you can't get your hand on. And you reminded me of that that note that was published by the MSCI earlier this year about whether or not it's going to include those dual voting structured shares in some of its indices. I think they were going to publish something by October, so we're going to
have to... They were against it, and for good reason, because of the points I made earlier. I must admit, I have not yet seen an official...
I haven't either, so you've given me a great story lead to follow up on. Listen, Mainkey's portfolio manager at Invest Securities with your Tuesday Markets.